The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with a drama in real life from the Reader's Digest. For the parents of the bride, fear replaces happiness as a raging river scoops up their car on a way to a wedding. Mjarhan van Eelk was excited. The 57-year-old from the Netherlands had just landed on the island of Mallorca with her family for the wedding of her daughter, Iris van Eijk. It's E-I-J-K. I think it's Eijk is proper. It was a day she dreamed about. The intimate ceremony was taking place the next day, October 10, 2018. 21 guests were planning to gather at the stunning villa in the hills near the picturesque town of St. Laurent de Cadazar, Spain, just under an hour's drive from the airport. "Can't wait for the barbecue tonight, never mind the wedding," Marjan told her mother, Betts Katsu. Katsu was a sharp, warm-hearted 85-year-old, but she wasn't in the best of health. A year earlier, she had emergency surgery performed on a perforated intestine and now wore a colostomy bag. Hip problems meant she had to walk with crutches, but she was thrilled to be attending her granddaughter's wedding on such a beautiful setting. She also felt comforted by the fact that the family had brought along a nurse, Marion Thunesson, to help her. The three women and Van Eijk's husband, Peter John van Eijk, walked out to the airport around 6 p.m. and into a rental car. Iris and her fiancé, Cohen Wilson, were waiting on the property, thrilled to share such a magical event with the ones they loved. On the road to St. Laurent, the family gazed at Mallorca's rugged countryside with its rolling, rocky slopes, peppered by wispy grasses and low green trees. As they crossed the hilly landscape, the sun had gone down and the rain was falling heavily. But they didn't detract from the beauty of the island off Spain's eastern coast. They chatted happily. Peter Jean, a quiet historian, kept them amused with witty observations from the driver's seat. They had no inkling that the rainfall, more than 9 inches would fall that day, wow, had already reached dangerous levels. As they drove beyond the town of St. Laurent, and up the winding road about a half a mile into the hills, the rain came down harder and the sky grew darker. They were approaching a bridge over what was normally a small stream when, without warning, a wave of dirty, fast-moving water washed over the top of it. Within seconds, the little white car went sliding down into the now-raging river and surged down the hillside. It all happened so quickly that the people inside the car were too shocked to scream. As the car lurched and spun through the water, its roof scraping the underside of a couple of bridges, they clutched to the seats and doors in dumb disbelief. The flood carried the car back through St. Laurent, which was now engulfed by several feet of water. On and on and on the vehicle went, a few hundred yards south of the town, where finally it caught on a submerged object in the middle of the torrent. Marjan, the mother of the bride, felt the water swirling around her feet and looked down. Muddy brown flood water was pouring into the car and rising quickly. Sitting in the back seat with his mother nurse, she knew they all had to get out quickly before the waters rose too high in the car and they drowned. Marjan was small but deceptively strong. Forcing the back door open, she jumped under the chest-high water. Thunesson, the nurse, followed. Marjan grabbed the front door handle and tried to open the door to reach Peter Jean and Karsu in the front seat, but the water pressure on the door was too much. Suddenly, the rising churner water flipped the car onto its roof, leaving Peter Jean and his mother-in-law hanging in their seatbelts, seconds away from being submerged. This is the end, he thought. But then, just as suddenly, another rush of water flipped the car right side up again. Braced against the current, Marjan got a grip on the back door handle and used all her strength to pull the door open. She hauled her husband and mother one at a time between the two front seats and out of the vehicle, coughing and sputtering. But the danger was far from over. The four of them clung to the back of the car as the waters rushed over them. They were being battered by debris, including branches and pieces of metal. The sky was completely dark, illuminated only by occasionally flashes of lightning as the rain continued to pelt down. The flooded stream was now more than 80 yards across. They were trapped almost in the middle. Peter Jean yelled for help, but his wife was sure it was hopeless. "I don't think anyone can even see us, let alone hear us," she thought. "We don't stand a chance." Ginto Galabay stared out of the window of his small summer home. The 57-year-old, an administrator for the local city government, had just come home after making a harrowing 1-mile drive from St. Laurent through rain so severe that it was almost impossible to see. The narrow, usually empty stream 100 yards or so away had surged from its banks, swamping the rocky ground toward his property. He'd come to pick up his daughter, Margarita Galamias, 24, who was staying at the house, intending to return to his home in St. Laurent, where his wife was. But the floodwaters forced him to stay put with his daughter. At around the same time, his neighbor, Mikel Montoro, stepped out of the door of his summer house. It was now well past 7 p.m. and dark, but during the frequent flashes of lightning, Montoro could make out 10 or more cars in the floodwaters. Suddenly, just above the roar of the water, he heard screams coming from a white car 40 yards or so out into the raging stream. Gomez heard the screams, too, and rushed out to join his neighbor. "We've got to do something," he told Montoro. Montoro agreed. "If we don't try, we might hear those screams for the rest of our lives," he said. Montoro ran to his van and shone his headlights across the water toward the car so they could get a better idea of what they were facing. But even with the headlights, they still couldn't see many details, not even how many people they might need to rescue. What they could see was how far they would have to go into the fast-flowing waters. Montoro grabbed a long length of rope from his house, and the two men tied themselves together like mountain climbers. Montoro, a strong 47-year-old blacksmith, would be the anchor, feeding Gomez the line as the latter pushed through the flood. Gomez, like his neighbor, had wound the rope around his middle with enough remaining free so he could throw the loose end to those needing rescue. They started into the water and toward the car. The stranded family spotted the van's headlights and screamed even louder for help. Along with occasional flashes of lightning, their cries were Montoro and Gallius' only real guide as to exactly where they were. The two men could feel themselves sinking into the churning mud, but according to plan, Montoro stood firm while Gomez fought the current to struggle ahead. Gomez was tough, but at barely 5 feet tall, he was soon chest-deep in the water. "Don't go any farther," Montoro shouted. "The current will take you." But Gomez ignored his friend and kept fighting the current. Refrigerators, wooden pallets, and even whole trees cast by on either side of him. A gas cylinder smashed into Montoro's ribs. Both men knew that something bigger could send them to their deaths, but they were driven by pure adrenaline. It took Gomez 10 minutes to get within 10 yards of the car. He could make out 4 people clinging to the back. They pleaded with him for help in what little Spanish they knew. "Ayuda! Ayuda! Help! Help!" Bracing himself, Gomez threw the end of the rope toward the car, hoping someone would be able to grab hold. But it always landed just out of reach. After several attempts, Peter Jean, who was closest, caught the rope. Gomez gestured to him to tie it around his waist. Then Gomez steadied himself as he pulled the Dutchman toward him. Peter Jan stumbled on. Weighed down by a heavy jacket, he lost his balance and plunged underwater. Spitting out water, he struggled back to his feet, and Gomez hauled on the rope until he was close enough for Peter Jean to fling his arms around him like an octopus. Worried that Peter Jean would drag them both under, Gomez, with Montoro pulling on the rope, got him to safety quickly. They hoped that the tall 60-year-old might be able to help rescue the others. But Peter Jean was dazed and shaking with shock. Gomez turned his efforts back to the 3 people still clinging to the car. After bringing Cachou's nurse to safety, he went back for Marjan and her mother. Suddenly, before anyone could stop her, Marjan dived below the surface and back into the car to grab her mother's medications. It was a foolish gambit, but she reemerged second later with the meds. She tied the rope around her waist and grabbed hold of her mother. With Gomez pulling, the 2 women slowly made their way toward him, Marjan straining to hold Cachou aloft through the water that was almost up to her neck. They made it safely to Gomez. Then, with Montoro heaving on the rope, they pushed through the rushing waters toward Chou. But just as they reached shallower water, Cachou lost her balance and fell to her knees, sinking into the mud. Gomez and Montoro tried to lift her, but they couldn't. Desperate, Montoro untied himself and rushed to get a wheelbarrow. He and Gomez lifted Cachou just enough to get her into it. With one man pulling and the other pushing the wheelbarrow, Montoro and Gomez dragged her through the sopping ground to dry land. The rescued Dutch family, the nurse and Gomez, gathered in Montoro's house. The Spaniards gave them blankets and found dry clothes for them to put on. The Thunicin and Margarita, Gomez's daughters, who was also a nurse, tended to Cachou. She was shivering and weak. She needed to get to a hospital. But with no cell signal, there was no way of calling an ambulance. Besides, the street leading up to the rain road to Sart Larec had been washed away. Montoro had no option but to try to restore the road himself, using his tractor. After an hour or so, it was passable, and the Spaniards took the family up to a roundabout where local police were directing traffic around blocked roads. The Dutch group was taken to a shelter. Cachou was rushed to a hospital where she was checked over and released the following day. Later that evening, Gomez drove to St. Laurent to reunite with his wife. The town looked as if an earthquake had hit it. Debris filled the streets, and cars were piled on top of one another. Back at his main house, Todd Montoro found his partner and friends glued to news reports and frantically contacting loved ones. "I'm going to have a shower," Montoro said matter-of-factly as he walked to the bathroom. "I've just rescued 4 people." 13 people lost their lives or laid during what was one of Mallorca's worst flash floods in memory. In June 2019, King Philippe VI presented Gomez and Montoro with the Spanish Order of Civil Merit in August of that year in St. Lorette's Town Hall with the Dutch family looking on. The Dutch ambassador awarded the 2 men with the Erepening Ramishlevelhupiltetan Medal of Honor for Humanitarian Aid. Iris and Cohen were married in a simple ceremony in the Netherlands instead. How about a little word power? To celebrate our centennial, the centerpiece of this quiz is cent from the Latin centum. Think centimeter, centuri, or centipede, which often means 100. But don't get complacent. This letter combo also turns up in words that have nothing to do with 100. Beneficent. Is that a charitable, all-powerful, or blissful? It's charitable. A beneficent person might volunteer at a food pantry or homeless shelter. Centaur. Ancient sculpture, king's advisor, a mythological creature. Of course it's a mythological creature. According to ancient Greek lore, the centaur was half man, half horse. Accentuate. Make shorter, highlight, or mispronounce. Highlight. Does this dress accentuate my waist? I hope not. I don't wear dresses. Centigrade. Fahrenheit, Kelvin, or Celsius. Centigrade is Celsius. Using the centigrade temperature scale, water boils at 100 degrees. Nascent. Emerging, fragrant, or bankrupt. Emerging. The nascent tech company put 3 major competitors out of business in its first year. Epicenter. Brainstem, exact offices, and a focal point. It's a focal point. Last month's earthquake was so massive it shook towns more than 50 miles from its epicenter. Effervescent. Unimportant, acidic, or high-spirited. High-spirited. With his effervescent personality, Dante is always the life of the party. Incentivize. Engage, motivate, or sell for profit. Motivate. After months of remote work during the pandemic, how will employers incentivize people to return to the office? Acquiescent. Is that obedient, greedy, or simmering? Acquiescent is obedient. We're hoping a good dog trainer can turn Fido into a more acquiescent pup. And then we have licentious. Is that disputed, lewd, or infested? It's lewd. I like the play, but it's a bit too licentious for high school actors, the drama teacher said. Docent. Is that a midwife, a nobleman, or a tour guide? A docent is a tour guide. This painting is from Picasso's famous Blue Period, the docent said, which is exactly what my girlfriend is doing today. She is a docent at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Eccentric, that's kind of me. Offbeat, selfish, or sordid. Eccentric is offbeat. Claire's outfits are an eccentric mix of neon patterns, leather jackets, and lacy headbands. Fluorescent is that feminine, flowering, or fermented? Fluorescent is flowering. Louise's garden is so fluorescent you can barely see her house from the street. And centrifuge. A spinning machine, a bomb shelter, or a hurricane's eye? It's a spinning machine. Many beekeepers use a centrifuge to extract honey from honeycombs. And last is reticent. Penny-pinching, virtuous, or silent? That means silent. Milo is a chatterbox, but his wife is more reticent. Why shouldn't you keep plastic wrap in a drawer? That sticky ball of plastic wrap isn't doing anyone any good. Stop ruining your plastic wrap with this simple trick. If you used plastic wrap before, chances are you struggle with a universal problem. The sticky food saver might just be too sticky. You're trying to stick it to a bowl or pan, but the wrap just seems to be more interested in sticking to itself. And since you should never wrap leftovers in aluminum foil, you're stuck wrestling with the thin sheets of plastic. According to Lionel Ross, certified health and wellness coach and nutritionist trained in food safety, the problem may not be your brand, it might just be how you're storing it. Most of us slide our plastic wrap into a kitchen drawer or cupboard, right next to the aluminum foil and wax paper. But Ross recommends something a little different. Store your plastic wrap in your freezer. The cold air in the freezer makes the plastic wrap much easier to handle. By freezing, the plastic wrap molecular structure of it changes, causing the surface to weaken chemical bonds, Ross told Reader's Digest. Plastic wrap is usually made of polyvinylidene chloride, PVC, or polyethylene, materials that, when cut thinly like plastic wrap, tend to attract static. Many brands of plastic wrap add adhesive to increase the stickiness. According to Ross, both should be lessened by the cold temperature. The cold would eliminate some of the static electricity, which helps prevent the plastic from sticking to itself, making it much easier to unroll and use. And we know how infuriating it can be to fight with sticky plastic wrap. Ross isn't the only one. UK-based food writer Liana of Liana's Kitchen learned this trick from her mother-in-law. "I find it regains its stickiness within about 1 minute of being out of the freezer, which is perfect timing for getting whatever I need wrapped or covered up," Liana said. "If I'm ever out of freezer space, I'll just pop the plastic wrap in it for about 10 to 15 minutes before I need it. This is usually enough time for the freezer to work its magic. By the way, I've tried this too. It does work. It is safe to put the plastic wrap in the freezer. And in addition, when you double food wraps that you bring home from the supermarket, you prevent freezer burn. The thin plastic on meat and poultry from the grocery store is too thin to protect foods well," he says. "Now that your plastic wrap is a whole lot less sticky, it will unroll a lot more quickly than you're used to. Be sure to use the tabs on the side of the box to help control the roll in order to keep from pulling out half the plastic wrap in one go. And if you're not aware, all plastic wraps in aluminum foil have punch holes in the end of the carton so you can stick your finger in there to help unroll it." Six bills that you shouldn't put on auto pay. And this is kind of important. Putting your bills on auto pay is a simple and seamless way to budget each month. But beware, there are a few bills and balances that don't make sense to streamline. Paying your bills online has many benefits, like avoiding late fees, reducing paper bills, and adding security. But what about putting your bills in the queue using AutoPay? Regardless of the type of bill being paid, Dana Marhenu, Credit Karma's former VP of Communications and Brand, recommends using automatic payments to pay your monthly bills only if you're confident you can afford to pay in full. Otherwise, you may build up a balance that would charge you interest, and that could undermine your efforts to stay on top of your bills, Marhenu explains. If you aren't confident you can pay in full, avoid auto pay. In particular, she says, you might want to avoid paying the following bills on auto pay: annual subscriptions or auto premiums. You shouldn't have infrequent bills on auto pay, like annual subscription or semi-annual vehicle insurance premium, because you're likely to forget about them. If one of those bills hits your account when your balance is low, you may end up overdrawing your bank account and getting hit with a fee, or you may be getting charged for it without even realizing it, if you don't check your statements diligently. Plus, it's important to pay attention to how many subscription services you're using. Having an excess amount is one of the spending habits personal finance experts hate the most. Utility and cable bills. Don't use automatic payments for bills where the total fluctuates each time. Think utility bills and cable bills that could end up being different total each month. You should also avoid paying certain bills with cash, including utility bills. Credit card bills. Credit card bills can present challenges when it comes to automatic bill pay because you want to cover at least the minimum amount due, and you may or may not have enough money to pay every month. Smart credit card management is a must for healthy personal finance, so make sure you know the purchases you definitely should and definitely should not use a credit card for. Memberships. Lastly, any temporary changes like memberships or subscriptions should not be on auto pay to ensure you're only paying for the time you use them. If you sign up for a trial service but forget you're paying since it's on autopay, you may be shocked when you finally look at your credit card bill later on and find you've been paying for a service you weren't using. In order to pay a bill each time and ensure you aren't overspending, it's sometimes helpful to set aside a regular recurring time to pay your bills. Schedule a block of time on your calendar and try to make it part of your routine. Marno recommends that you set up alerts every time a payment is taken from your bank account, so you know what is being spent, whether it's done manually or automatically. These tips demonstrate the importance of knowing how your money is being spent. Making and keeping a budget is a useful way to do that. Where did the phrase dime a dozen come from? Why do we say something's a dime a dozen, and what does that even mean? Turns out its meaning has evolved throughout history. We've all heard the phrase dime a dozen before. Have you ever thought about where it came from, though? And if it means the same thing now as it did in the past. Similar phrases like knock on wood, cat out of the bag, take it with a grain of salt, or break a leg, it has interesting origins. What does a dime a dozen mean? This idiom means that something is easy to find or attain. Since it's easy to find, it doesn't have a lot of value and is considered cheap or ordinary. Here's how to use it in sentences. During apple season, apples around here go for a dime a dozen. A liar's stories are worth a dime a dozen. Dime a dozen origins. After the dime was made in 1796, people started advertising goods for a dime a dozen. This meant you were getting a good deal on products such as a dozen eggs. Over time, the idiom evolved to mean the opposite. Instead of something being a good deal, it became a phrase of describing something that's not valuable and easily available. The first known usage in this context is believed to have occurred in 1930. From there, people picked up on the phrase's new meaning and started using it in that context. Synonyms for this phrase include cheap, common, usual, ordinary, run-of-the-mill. Another phrase with interesting origin, no worries, did you know that's actually an Australianism? Is a dime a dozen an insult? It depends on how you use the phrase. You can use it without malice, after all. Let's use the examples above to discuss different uses. During apple season, apples around here go for a dime a dozen. In the case above, you're saying that apples are common and fine during apple season. Now let's look at the other example. A liar stories are worth a dime a dozen. In this case, you're saying a liar stories are cheap and not valuable. That's why it's important to use this phrase in the right context. You wouldn't want to accidentally insult someone. The world of good reasons to smile. In Bisbee, Arizona, there stands an old phone booth. Open the bifold doors and use the rotary call dial to call a number from the booth's directory. You'll be connected to a lyrical voice, one of around 100 local and famous poets reading their works, like the evocative Waiting by Jesse Sensabaugh. I know what it feels like to wait, so long you forget over the years you were even waiting. Except you every once in a while, you catch yourself looking out the window to see if they have finally returned. Like the verse you may hear when you call, entry is free. The telepoem booth, it's called a telepoem booth, is the brainchild of artist Olivia Hellstern, 46, who has also set up booths in Dubuque, Iowa, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and at New Mexico's Highland University near Penn State. Hearing the poet reading his own poetry brings it to life, she says. Conveys a lot of human emotions, and so does a telephone call. And there's a picture of her. She has puffy red hair, a big, huge purse hanging over her shoulder, a long skirt, tennis shoes on, and she's talking on the phone. Everyday Heroes, the Alligator Wrestler. A spectator reptile exhibit becomes part of the show when the star attraction attacks its handler. And there's two pictures here. And a person is Bull left with Wiseman. Words can't express how grateful I am, she says. Bull apparently is the rescuee, and the rescuer is Wiseman. And Wiseman is a real tall-looking guy with a shaved head, big ears. And she's kind of a petite young lady. Donnie Wiseman almost didn't get to his niece's fifth birthday party last August. He was worn after working long hours at his construction job. But the party was being held at Scales and Tails in Utah, a reptile and bird center in suburban Salt Lake City. Ever since childhood, Wiseman had been infatuated with reptiles. They're now the closest thing we have to a dinosaur, he says. So he skipped a nap and went to his wife and six-year-old stepson. When they arrived at Scales and Tails, they were led to a small indoor area with a pool of water surrounded by a 9-foot-tall viewing windows. Inside was the center star attraction, an 8-foot-long, 150-pound alligator named Darth Gator. He swam around the pool before resting his head on a 2-foot-wide platform. It was feeding time, and the hungry gator was staring expectantly through the glass door at his trainer, Lindsey Bull. For safety's sake, Bull 31 wanted Darth off the ledge before beginning the show. Entering the enclosure, she held out an arm and yelled back. Uncharacteristically, Darth Gator responded by snapping open his jaws to reveal all 80 of his teeth. Outside the enclosure, awestruck kids pressed their faces against the windows. Wiseman was right there with them, eager for the show to start. To get Darth Gator back into the water, Bull placed her left hand under his jaw and tried to manually scoot him backward, a technical move she's performed before. But today, Darth wasn't having it. He rolled his head to the side, surprising Bull. Her hand slipped out from under his jaw, and Darth clapped down on it. An alligator's bite measures 28,980 pounds of pressure per square inch. To put that in perspective, a lion's bite has a BSI of 1,000, so Darth would have little trouble dragging Bull into the pool of water. She knew she couldn't stop him from going into a death roll or a dreaded maneuver where alligators spin rapidly to subdue their prey, so she allowed herself to be pulled into the pool. Outside the enclosure, some wondered if this was part of the show. Not Wiseman. Sensing something was wrong, he threw open the glass door and climbed inside. Jump on his back, Bull gasped. Wiseman leaped from the platform to straddle the gator's back. then lay flat, pressing down with all of his 180-pound body weight. "Push your fist into the top of his snout," said Bull. Wiseman did as he was told. Keeping Dart's mouth shut shifted the power dynamic, and the gator suddenly went from predator to prey. "With Donnie on his back, I knew Darth would eventually let me go," says Bull. For the next minute or two, they waited. Then Darth Gator finally eased his grip. Bull quickly pulled her hand out of his mouth and was helped from the enclosure by a bystander. That left Wiseman alone in the tanks to top the alligator. Bull calmly shouted directions. "Move your hands from his snout to his neck. Sit up, then push off from his back to stand and get to the platform." Wiseman cautiously sat up, but releasing some of the pressure from Darth's back, the power dynamic shifted again, and Darth Gator began to thrash. Wiseman leaped off in and onto the platform, scrambling out of the enclosure. Bull received 38 stitches on her hand and was treated for a torn wrist tendon and a chip in her thumb bone. Though recovered, she hasn't stopped thinking about Wiseman. "He reacted to a situation he didn't have to react to," she says. Aside from a few scratches, Wiseman was more shaken than injured. He admits that during his time astride the alligator, a thought kept popping into his mind. "One mistake and I'll be a statistic." Still, he says, "I'm just glad I was there." Chipping away at poverty. Arajiti Olita thinks she may have a potential solution for two of our country's persistent problems, garbage and poverty. It's called the Chip Bag Project. The 26-year-old student and environmentalist from Detroit is asking a favor of local snack lovers. Rather than toss your empty chip bags into the trash, donate them so she can turn them into sleeping bags for the homeless. Chip eaters drop off their empty bags from Doritos, Lay's, and other favorites at two locations in Detroit, a print shop and a clothing store, where Olita and her volunteer helpers collect them. After they sanitize the chip bags in soapy hot water, they slice them open, lay them flat, and iron them together. They use padding and liners from Old Coach to line the insides. It takes about 4 hours to sew a sleeping bag, and each takes around 150 to 300 chip bags, depending on whether they're single-serve or family size. "The result is a sleeping bag that is waterproof, lightweight, and easy to carry around," Olita told the Detroit News. Since it started in 2020, the Chip Bag Project has collected more than 800,000 chip bags, and has last December created 110 sleeping bags. Sure, it would be simpler to raise the money to buy new sleeping bags, but that's only half the goal for Olita, whose family moved to the United States from Nigeria a decade ago with hope of attaining a better life, and her fellow volunteers. "We are dedicated to making an impact not only socially but environmentally," she says. "And, of course, there's a symbolism of salvaging bags that would otherwise land in the trash and using them to help the homeless. It's a powerful reminder that environmental injustice and poverty often go hand in hand. As Alito told Our Detroit, I think it's time to show connections between all of these issues." And let's go to Consumer Reports, a road report. Stop paying too much for your car loan. Some borrowers, including those with great credit, are charged interest rates as high as 25%. A CR investigation has found, here's what we learned and how you can get a fair deal when you buy. 2 years ago, Maryland resident with sterling credit financed a 2018 Toyota Camry with a loan that had a 19% annual percentage rate and a monthly payment of about $823. By the time the loan is expected to pay off in late 2025, the borrower will have spent roughly $59,000, more than twice the car's value, and about what you would pay for a high-end Tesla Model 3. Another borrower who got stuck in a car loan with sky-high APR suffered even more serious consequences. The man, an insurance account manager from Connecticut, who earns about $80,000 per year, bought a used Toyota Tacoma pickup truck at a local dealership in early 2019. But the monthly payments on his loan with a 17% APR came to $900. Though he was able to make those payments for a while, by the spring of 2020 he had fallen behind. His truck was repossessed in 2020. These are just two stories out of many about the effects of what has become a widespread practice. Auto lenders giving consumers expensive car loans, even to borrowers whose incomes and credit credentials ought to qualify them for far better ones. Over the past decade, auto loan debt held by Americans has skyrocketed, surpassing $1.4 trillion, more than the gross domestic product of Australia. And Americans today with new car loans are paying a lot more every month, roughly 25% more than 10 years ago on average. To understand why this is happening and to investigate the effect on consumers, Consumer Reports assembled and analyzed almost 858,000 loans from 17 major lenders that had been bundled into bonds sold to investors in 2019 and 2020. Details about these loans, the vast majority of which were arranged through dealerships, the primary way Americans finance cars, are required by the Securities and Exchange Commission to be made public, including information about the terms of the loan and the borrower's finances. The data, while not nationally representative, provided a close-up look at what Americans can pay or overpay when they borrow money for a car. What one loan ended up costing. A 2018 Toyota Camry loan in Maryland, he borrowed $35,000 at 19% APR. His total payments are going to be almost $59,000 over 6 years. Similar consumers got very different loans. The cost of borrowing was all over the map and often not tethered to the borrower's credit score. Some borrowers with super prime credit scores, 720 or higher, were in loans with 0% APR, while others with similar loans got APRs of more than 25%. We found the same wide range of APRs when we looked at deep subprime borrowers whose scores below 580. We found examples of loans with vastly different terms given borrower with almost identical finances the same car. Sadly, this is all too common, says Ian Ayers, a lawyer and economist at Yale University School of Management and Yale Law School, who has studied disparate pricing in auto lending. I've seen a surprising number of consumers with excellent credit who are nonetheless written into subprime loans with high APRs. A tale of two borrowers. A 2017 Chevrolet Trax, about $18,000 in financing. $60,000 to $66,000 annual incomes. Prime credit scores for California residents. One paid 49.9% APR. The other paid 14.1% APR. Total payments for one was $20,448. For the second one at 14% was $27,540. Dealers and lenders appeared to charge what they could get away with. To understand why interest rates varied so much among borrowers with similar credit scores, CR statisticians considered numerous factors, including payment-to-income ratio when the loan was issued, whether a co-borrower was present, the length of the loan, the amount of equity in the car, and whether the purchaser received financial incentives on the loan. None could fully explain the vast differences in cost. So what's going on? Experts CR spoke to with say dealers and lenders may be setting interest rates based not only on risk, standard loan underwriting practice, but also partly on what they think they can get the borrowers to agree to. Studies show that many borrowers don't know they should or even can negotiate the terms of a loan or shop around for other offers. The financing you get has a lot more to do with how prepared for battle you are when you walk into the showroom floor than your financial history. Many people were given loans they couldn't afford. Lending experts recommend that consumers spend no more than 10% of their income on car debt. That's because paying more than that you can afford poses serious financial risk, including default. But in our data, almost 25% of borrowers spend more than that on a car loan. People with low credit scores, who tend to have lower incomes, appear to be particularly likely to spend more than 10% of their monthly income on car loans. Some good credit customers got pricey loans. The average APR for borrowers with credit scores of 660 or higher ranged from 3.73% to 5.94%. But in the data CR reviewed, almost 21,000 customers with those credit tiers, about 3% of the entire group, paid exorbitant rates of 10 to almost 25% for their car loans. Over time, the cost of those high loans, high rates can be significant. A typical borrower can, among that group of people, would spend $4,500 more over the life of the loan if they paid average rates. Income verification was rare. 96% of borrowers did not have their income verified. When financing a home, lenders typically check a borrower's income and employment. But in the car loan CR reviewed, lenders verified income just 4% of the time, and employment often even less. Consumers such as Oklahoma resident Lana Ash learned the hard way about lax underwriting in April 2020. She received a loan arranged by a dealer through the lender Santander Consumer USA. But when Ash received her first bill from Santander, she learned she owed $428 per month, about 20% more than she agreed to with the dealer. She discovered the dealer had overstated her income on her loan application, according to a lawsuit she later filed. Santander ultimately repossessed her car in August 2020. Her attorney says the lawsuit is pending. Santander declined to comment. Income verification could have prevented this. I think they should take the steps to make sure the person can afford the payments, Ash said. Of course, owning a car is not so much a choice as a requirement to drive to a job, a doctor, or to shop for food. Lower-income people spend a higher percentage of their budget on cars out of necessity, says John Von Alst, an attorney and expert on auto lending at the National Consumer Law Center, a consumer advocacy nonprofit. One in four spend over 10% of their income on car loans. Who's spending over 10% of the income? 48% of borrowers with low credit scores under 620. 20% of borrowers with high credit scores 660 and over, surprisingly. Delinquencies and repossessions were common. With so many people devoting so much of their monthly income to car loans, you expect a lot of late payments and forfeited cars, and there certainly are. 5% or 1 in 20 were reported to be delinquent on their loan. After 30 to 90 days, lenders generally start the process of repossessing cars. Consumers with low credit scores are more likely to be affected. A 2020 survey of 28 non-prime lenders representing billions of dollars worth of auto loans reported that those lenders had a repossession rate of around 13% in 2019, or roughly 1 in 8 vehicles financed by them. Between 2017 and 2019, 1.6 million to 1.7 million cars were repossessed annually, industry estimates show. If you're not helping somebody get a car, if the odds are that they're going to lose it, that's not getting somebody a car, that's taking their money. How to shop for a car loan. Whether you're a paragon of virtue when it comes to your credit or not, there are steps to take before borrowing for a car that will help you make sure that you are offered fair terms and that you don't borrow more than you can afford. Review your credit report and score. This is something you should do months in advance, says Jordan Takayama, public relations expert at Experian, a credit reporting agency. Your report, which lists your bill payment history and debts, is used to calculate your credit score, which in turn is used to help determine the interest rate you might be charged on a loan. Generally, the better you score, the lower your interest rate because you are considered by lenders to be low risk. To get a free credit report, go to annualcreditreport.com. Check your credit score, see whether your bank or credit card shows you a free version. Just knowing your score gives you a starting point so that you can manage your expectations. Improve your score. Sometimes improving a low score is as simple as correcting mistakes or discrepancies in your credit report. Most mistakes and disputes are addressed in 10 to 14 days. Takayama says, and credit reporting agencies generally must complete investigations within 30 days. Paying down existing debt and late bills can also give you a last-minute bump. As always, pay bills for credit cards, utilities, and goods promptly to avoid late fees and further damage to your credit score. Set a loan budget and stick to it. Dealer sales staff can be masters of the upsell. Consider your needs today and how they may evolve over the ownership period. Resist the urge to indulge in extras or to buy a bigger or fancier vehicle than you need, because you're likely to be paying on that depreciating asset for years to come. Make the biggest down payment you can. That shortens the loan, says Alan Nakasakam, Vice President of Lending and Insurance Solutions at TrueCar, a CR partner that analyzes market trends. Putting down more money in front also means you'll be paying interest on a smaller amount of money, costing you less overall. Don't focus on just the monthly cost, and this is something that dealers often try to do. Dealers often try to sell you on a loan by emphasizing what you will have to pay each month. And that does matter, of course, for budgeting purposes. But to get low monthly payments, you probably will need an extended loan length, which can increase the overall cost. Another downside to long-term loans, they increase the chances that you end up underwater or upside down on your loan, which means you owe more on the car than it's worth. Of course, a monthly cost you can handle is important too, so consider both factors when choosing a loan. Get pre-approved from your bank. Before you set foot in a dealership, either physically or virtually, contact your bank or credit union and get pre-approved for a loan. The dealer may be able to offer a better deal on financing, but having a loan secured ahead of time gives you a strong starting point for negotiations. If your credit isn't great, check out deals from car manufacturers. Some automakers, including Chrysler, Hyundai, Kia, Mitsubishi, and Nissan, offer financing for subprime borrowers, although it's usually focused on entry-level and economy cars. Consider buying a used vehicle. Now, this may not apply these days, the way prices are. Used vehicles that are just a few years old are unusually expensive right now, but you can still save money by buying an older model. Although interest rates tend to be higher on loans for used cars, lowering the amount you're borrowing can result in significant savings. Report suspected discrimination. A recent academic study found that black and Hispanic borrowers were 1.5 percentage point less likely to be approved for a loan, and that he paid interest rates that were 0.7 percentage points higher, even when their creditworthiness was the same. Loans offered by dealers are called indirect loans because the dealer arranges financing through a third-party company. But the dealer doesn't have to tell the borrower about all loan offers that lenders send. To make a profit, dealers mark up the loan they choose to share. The study suggests that loans to minority borrowers were marked up more. If you suspect discriminatory lending, file a complaint with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau or the Federal Trade Commission. Loan length affects cost. $25,000 auto loan at 3% APR. Total interest paid and the loan length. The monthly payment for 3 years would be $727 and interest would be $1,173. For 4 years, $550 a monthly payment, $1,561 would be the annual total interest paid. If you go for 5 years, your monthly payment would be $449 and you'd be paying almost $2,000 in interest. In six-year loan, your payment would be $380, and you'd be paying $2,350 in interest. If you go for 7 years, your payment's only $330, but you're paying almost $2,800 in interest charges over the life of the loan. Ways to make auto loans fairer. Here are some changes that can make it easier for you to find a good deal on a car loan. CR's investigation into auto lending raises serious questions about how the system can be unfair to consumers. For one thing, we found that some consumers who are similar in terms of their income, credit score, and even the type of car they are buying can be offered loans with wildly different terms. We examined about 858,000 car loans and found that the problem does not affect just people with poor credit scores. Some with excellent credit, the ones you think would get the best terms, are offered very expensive loans, CR found. Experts have no shortage of ideas for ways to make the system more equitable. Here are four key changes they'd like to see. You should be able to easily compare loans. Most people let the dealership handle the loan paperwork rather than going directly to a bank or credit union. Dealers typically shop around at various lenders to fund the loan, perhaps as many as nine, according to a 2020 study published by the National Bureau of Economic Research. But the loan selected by the dealer is not necessarily the loan that is best for the consumer, says Ryan Kelly, Acting Auto Finance Director Manager at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Consumers often do not realize that auto dealers are not required to select the cheapest loan, and instead may present one that provides the most profit for them. A requirement that dealers put loans up for bid and then tell borrowers about all the offers could correct this, says Alan Tyers, a lawyer, according to an economist at Yale University School of Management and Yale Law School, who has studied disparate pricing in auto lending. Chuck Bell, Programs Director at CR, agrees. Consumers would be much better served by a financing model where they can choose the best of competing loan offers. We also believe dealers should be required to disclose all the loan offers they currently receive to consumers because it's blatantly unfair to conceal that information, Bell says. Number two, you should be warned when offered a high-cost loan. That's a protection provided to people shopping for home mortgages, but not to those seeking auto loans. Home buyers offered a mortgage with an annual percentage rate that is 6.5 percentage points higher than the average rate for people with good credit must be alerted that their loan is considered high cost. Presented with that info, consumers may choose to shop around for a better loan. A similar model could work for car loans, Iris says. It could help protect car buyers if dealerships had to warn them when they were likely to pay too much for their loan. Number three, you should be able to cool off before accepting a loan. A three-day waiting period between when a car dealer offers a loan and you accept it could help in several ways, according to an article by Adam Levitin, a Georgetown University law professor. For one, it might help borrowers to avoid discretionary add-ons, such as vehicle service contracts or supplemental gap insurance, which dealers often try to load into loans. And it might motivate a borrower to shop around for a loan through a bank or credit union. And number four, more data should be available. Mortgage lenders must release certain information about loans they make, including the race and income, but not the names of their borrowers. That helps researchers and the public better understand problems such as discrimination in the housing market. Auto lenders are under no such obligation. That makes it far harder to understand and fix the inequities we know exist in the car lending world, says CR's Bill. Track intelligence. Recommending from CR's team of auto experts. Some hybrids take longer to brake. Braking test at CR's Auto Test Center shows that some hybrids require longer stopping distances than gas-only versions of the same model. This difference is partly due to the fact that automakers often use low rolling resistance tires on their hybrids to maximize fuel economy. Those tires can require longer distance to safely come to a full stop. For instance, when we compared the stopping distance of the hybrid and non-hybrid versions of four Toyotas, the compact Corolla sedan, the midsize Camry sedan, the small RAV4 SUV, and the midsize Highlander SUV, we found that the hybrid models had a dry braking stopping distance that was 8 feet to 12 feet longer than the gas-only versions and a stop from 16 miles per hour. That extra distance could mean the difference between a near collision and a crash, for instance, if you have to brake suddenly to avoid a car, an animal, or another obstacle on the road. Models from some other automakers also fared similarly in our testing, with the Chrysler Pacifica hybrid minivan needing an extra 9 feet to stop from 60 miles per hour compared with its gas-only counterpart. The Hyundai Sonata hybrid sedan needed an additional 8 feet. Before you buy, always do this. CR's rating provided a detailed evaluation of a vehicle's overall performance. When comparing different hybrid models to buy, weigh the benefit of a high miles per gallon against any potential loss in braking or handling. Because tires play such a crucial role, do your homework when it's time to replace them. CR's tire rating can help you find models that maximize both performance and fuel economy. Consider factors other than miles per gallon. Instead of chasing maximum miles per gallon, consider the hybrid models such as the Hyundai Elantra, Ford Escape, or Honda CR-V. They get slightly fewer miles per gallon, but performs markedly better in braking distance. Agility and grip are also important and are indicated in our avoidance maneuver test. Strong performance in these areas could help you prevent certain types of crashes. Fuel economy is an important concern, but always be sure to consider along with other factors. Giving up shorter stopping distance for incrementally better fuel economy is a bad choice, says Jake Fisher, Senior Director of Auto Testing at Consumer Reports. You'd be better off with a car that stops shorter, even if it means sacrificing a few miles per gallon to achieve those goals. Now here's a comment from the President and CEO of Consumer Reports. Staying strong against COVID. Over the past few months, my family, like yours, has had to take precautions to see one another, from limiting the numbers at gatherings to testing before special occasions. As the COVID-19 pandemic continues into its third year, so many people have made sacrifice for the good of their communities, and there's no doubt it's wearing many of us down. That's understandable. This is the largest global health crisis in 100 years, and we're all learning as we go. Like many of you, I look forward to the day when we can do many things that we once took for granted. But for now, we must stay the course, keeping up to date on all the new research on COVID-19, which is helping us to better understand, prevent, and treat this disease. The uncertainty we've been experiencing can be frustrating. All of us are craving certainty when change seems to be the one constant. But we have to continue to adapt, following good science, testing hypotheses, adhering to the changing advice as new data becomes available. We all will need stamina, so I invite you to continue via CR's Coronavirus Resource Hub, cr.org/COVID, for practical advice on new developments. For example, many experts recommend shifting from cloth masks to an N95, KN95, or KF94, or other high-performing masks if possible. To avoid counterfeits, go to a reliable source that CR has identified, such as the nonprofit Project 95, that's project95.org. Check with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC.gov, for the latest guidance on vaccination, masking, and more. And follows the CDC's recommendation to get a booster, if you're eligible. Studies show that it's one of our best defenses, but too many Americans have skipped it. This pandemic is one of the biggest challenges we've ever faced, and all more so because of its duration, the lives lost, the economic effects, and the emotional toll of it all. At CR, we will keep following the scientific advice to better serve all of you as to protect yourselves and your loved ones. Automatic braking for all. Safety should not be a luxury that only some can afford. That's why CR has been pushing to make sure all new cars are equipped with automatic emergency braking, AEB, a technology that stops or slows a vehicle if a collision is imminent. AEB has potential to save thousands of lives on our roads, just as seat belts, airbags, and other safety technologies do. Yet some automakers continue to offer it only as a non-standard option on select models, sometimes as part of a premium package, along with features like heated seats and chrome trim. So CR cheered when in 2016, 20 auto manufacturers joined a voluntary pledge brokered by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to equip almost all new cars with AEB by the 22-23 manufacturing year. Also, we also publicly monitored the automaker's progress toward that goal and pushed them along the way to step up, including by restricting to our CR top pick selection to vehicles that come standard with forward collision warning and AEB with pedestrian detection. Today, 12 of the 20, Audi, BMW, Ford, Lincoln, Honda, Acura, Hyundai, Genesis, Mazda, Mercedes-Benz, Subaru, Tesla, Toyota, Lexus, Volkswagen, and Volvo have succeeded in fulfilling the pledge. Now we'll be watching to make sure the remaining 8 automakers hit the target as quickly as possible. 42,000 is the number of crashes that were prevented over 3 years by fulfilling the AEB commitment, as estimated by the Institute of Highway Safety. CR Call to Action. CR recently published a series of investigations demonstrating serious problems in the auto lending industry. Among other things, we found that some dealers and lenders offer high-interest loans even to consumers with good credit. We just read that article. Apparently setting rates based not just on risk, but also partly on what they think they can get away with. We found that many state lending laws designed to stop such practices are rife with loopholes. Please sign our petition calling on Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to ensure that auto loans are fairly priced at cr.org/autoloans3222. I'm sorry, that's 322. Establishing a right to repair. What's at stake? Certain electronic makers have long insisted that devices be fixed only by authorized repair centers, which can be expensive or difficult to access. They enforce the restrictions through a range of practices, including by limiting access to spare parts, manuals, and specialized tools. The upshot, consumers sometimes have little choice but to throw their device away and buy a new one. How CR has your back? As a leader of the right to repair movement, CR has long opposed these practices. Among other measures, Apple phones are very much like. We helped our develop model right to repair legislation, versions of which have introduced in more than 25 state legislatures and at the federal level. We also incorporated the right to repair into digital standard, an open source set of technical criteria for evaluating the data privacy and security and influence the design of software digital services and internet connected products. Our efforts have recently been bearing fruit. Last summer, President Joe Biden directed the Federal Trade Commission to draft rules banning unfair repair restrictions. And in November 2021, Apple said it would start providing some spare parts and instruction manuals to consumers who want to do their own repairs, another encouraging sign that we are getting through. CR is now pushing for laws and regulations that would make Apple's policy an industry requirement. What you can do, urge your representatives in Congress to pass the CR-endorsed Fair Report Act, Repair Act, H.R. 4006, at congress.gov. And how about some letters? Our January 22, 2022 article, Best Way to Review Body and Mind, gave inspiration with 17 fresh ways to shake up your routine and get healthier and happier this year. Our readers wrote in to share their wellness secrets. To join the conversation, go to cr.org/health0322. If you can start small and commit the goal of moving more, little by little, walking farther is achievable. Tracking your movements with a Fitbit or other tracker can motivate you. Seeing just how the steps at your grocery trips can increase your movement numbers can motivate you to stretch to meet bigger goals. It's an ever-adapting commitment, and that's why walking can be effective. I'm 72 years old and walk 6 or 7 miles every day except when it's icy. I started 3 years ago by walking around the block, then added a block or two a day. I really love it. I read that walking in nature can help depression. I walk among the redwoods a couple of miles every day. That's nice if you live there. Life is the best when one can walk off amongst our natural forests. I think you really have hit some major points about aging well. I was struck with yoga for sleep suggestion. Exercise for people who have been active and now must limit what they do because of health concerns is important. I was a walker and a hiker and no longer can do that. Also a major problem for me and most people I know is isolation and loneliness. I have volunteered at humane societies and with the homeless, and can no longer do so due to my new limitations. These two are health issues, and most seniors I know have the same problems I do. Editor's note, even if you can't take long walks or hikes, research has shown that simply being in nature, even in your own backyard, lowers stress levels. If you can't get outside, seeing greenery from your bender or cultivating houseplants can help too. Regarding ancient grain, When adding amaranth to a smoothie, it should be cooked or uncooked. Editor's note. Experts caution that raw grains might contain foodborne pathogens such as E. coli and salmonella, so it's probably best to cook most grains, including amaranth, to kill the pathogens first. Cooking the grains may also make them easier for your body to digest. Treat yourself to a self-massage. I bought a massage gun from Costco. I just use it for about 10 seconds on one, yes, the lowest setting. That's enough for me. I still prefer a massage from a trained professional. Unfortunately, COVID-19 makes that very difficult. Editor's note. When it comes to a powered massage gun devices, it's important to use them with care, experts say. Overstimulating muscles with one can cause bruising and, in rare cases, the acute breakdown of muscle tissue. Stop immediately if you feel any pain. I was puzzled by the omission of biking in your January 2022 wellness suggestions. It offers low-impact exercise and is environmentally friendly, especially when a bike can substitute for a car. I commute to work 4 miles each way by bike. Entering my 80s, I adopted an e-bike, which nicely levels hills on my way home. David Lyons, Jamaica Plains, Massachusetts. Editor's note, we agree. Cycling is great exercise and a fun, eco-friendly way to get around town. E-bikes are particularly helpful for more arduous journeys. Ray Yoga. Doing cobra pose really helped my sciatica. Once the pain subsided, I started doing bird dog pose to keep it from coming back. One thing left out of the first part of this article, dealing with anxiety or stress. Get a dog. They change everything in a positive way. Regarding Costco chicken good for you, you made many good points about how our food animals are raised. But isn't the real answer federal legislation mandate more humane practices? Surely you can roast your own chicken. I do frequently. But are you going to pay an average of $7 to $12 for that roasting bird? It won't be ready to eat when you get home. My advice, take some time to search out a local humane, human-scale pastured poultry producer in your area and support them. Thanks for the information. I don't have strong views personally on chicken, but I feel more comfortable in my purchase knowing the pros and cons. My daughter broke her addiction to Costco rotisserie chicken. Now I buy the Whole Foods version, more expensive and not freshly big, but it actually tastes better. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's exposure to episode of Reader's Digest Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so very much for listening.